Money FM 89.3, the best of Saturday mornings. International News Review.
Welcome back. Steve Okun joining us in studio. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. And let me just say, for anyone who doubts the amount of trivial knowledge in Neil Humphrey's brain, Starry Night is at the MoMA. It's on the fifth floor in the Alfred H. Barr Galleries.
Well, there
don't
we go.
Don't let it get out there, Steve, but I am quite smart. I do have one of the highest degrees awarded in Britain.
Okay.
Don't let it get out there.
All right, let's move on into our first story, which is this incredible reporting that Reuters did, tracking the recycling of shoes, a program by SG Sport, Dow, and Decathlon and others, gathering shoes to be recycled into sports tracks, running tracks around Singapore. Reuters tracked 11 pairs of shoes and found out that they all ended up in sales shops and sales bins in Indonesia. Wow.
Look, Dow had an abject failure here. And it's not really because of ESG. It is because of greenwashing. But in a way, it's because Dow didn't do ESG on this project. Mm. ESG is about how a company operates and how it makes money, and in doing so, impacts the environment, impacts society, impacts how it interacts with its stakeholders. The problem Dow had here is that this, to them, was just a CSR program. Sure, that the chemicals that they manufacture do go into the soles of some shoes, but what happens after those shoes are used isn't part of Dow's business model. And so they come out with this great program to high praise from the Singapore government and from the business community, but they don't follow up on it because it's not important to their business. And that is why they have failed here and why they have been rightfully accused of greenwashing.
Explain where the failure is. It was one of the providers that was collecting the shoes for them, right? Part of their supply chain, if you will, on this.
No, this had nothing to do with their supply chain, right? This is what happened to a product after it was done.
Sorry.
So it's not in their supply chain. The problem was Dow took ownership of a program to get all the credit, but they did not execute to make sure that the program lived up to its promise. That's where the failure occurred. That's why Dow owns this, even though they can say, well, it was the people we contracted out to didn't execute and live up to what our commitment was. That's why Dow failed so badly here, and why, if you are going to make these commitments in a philanthropical context, you have to treat it the same way as you treat how you operate your business every day.
Yeah, and of course, you do this at McClarty Associates. You look at ESG every day. Just playing devil's advocate here, it was an international operation. Shoes left one country, went to another country. I'm not defending it. I'm just playing devil's advocate. How difficult, realistically, is it to enforce these things, to ensure that the shoes begin at one location and end at another?
Well, I mean, Neil, it's the same thing as saying, how difficult is it to make sure that there's no forced labor in your supply chain? It's not, we're not the ones who are employing the people who we are sourcing our goods from. Therefore, we shouldn't be responsible for it. Of course you are. That is what you have to do to be a responsible company, a responsible investor, a responsible employer. And so what apparently happened here very clearly, that Dow made the promise of what it was going to do with this program, but then it took no ownership of the program. It contracted out. Okay, that's fine. But if you're going to contract something out, you have to audit it. You have to take responsibility for it. And that is, you know, why I agree completely with this NGO called The Last Beach Cleanup. And they said that large petrochemical companies should have to report on the results of their sustainability projects with the same transparency as the profit-making parts of the business. If Dow had been auditing and following up, it would have stopped this from happening. So I'm not saying Dow intentionally knew this was going to happen. I have no idea, but I won't say that. But I will say, where was their audits in place? Where were they making sure that the compliance was going to happen? And because this was philanthropical in what they were doing, this is where you get into trouble.
Just to follow up on that, if I could, Glenn. I hadn't actually heard of this particular recycling scheme until this story unfolded. There are many, many recycling schemes in Singapore. So to your point, I don't think they would have done it intentionally for the simple reason this has clearly done much more harm than any corporate good they were hoping to achieve.
And having an ESG mindset prevents this from ever happening. So if you had approached this from a business perspective, you would have said, okay, we are going to set up a program that is going to make a commitment that we are going to set up all of these recycling bins. We're going to collect tens, if not hundreds of thousands of shoes, and then we're going to use those for sports facilities, and we're going to partner with the Singapore government. People would say, great idea. It can show how Dow is a responsible stakeholder, how Dow is trying to advance the circular economy by the chemicals that they have manufactured stay within the supply chain and just don't get dumped into the ocean or into landfill or wherever they go. But then you would say, okay, how are you going to execute on this after you make the announcement? And that's clearly where this fell down because that is what didn't take place.
Just to give some a little bit of background, over 100,000 pairs of shoes were collected at bins at Decathlon stores, at some of the HDB estates, different places around town, like those big recycling bins, but they were just for these shoes.
Yep.
The shoes were then supposed to go to a facility where they were ground up into pellets, rubber pellets, and those rubber pellets were supposed to be used for sports tracks and walking tracks and things like that around Singapore. Now, a company called Yoke Impex Private Limited is a Singaporean secondhand goods exporter. They were tasked or apparently hired by Dow to collect the shoes from the bins. And it was apparently, according to the reporting on Reuters, at their sorting facility where sacks of these shoes were sorted and the good shoes got sent overseas and resold, contrary to what was supposed to happen. And the rest of the shoes went and got pulped wherever they were supposed to get ground up. That is apparently what happened.
We certainly know that the shoes were shipped. Some shoes were shipped illegally because it seems to be illegal to be shipping
it is illegal
secondhand
to do that.
Clothing into Indonesia and then selling it.
Yep.
And so what and Dow and companies like Dow need to know that environmental groups say that chemical companies make exaggerated or false claims about recycling in order to burnish their green credentials and to undermine proposed regulations to rein in the production of plastics. And so, you know, if you are a chemical company, you are being watched at by these NGOs. Have a target on your back.
Yeah.
You had better make sure that if you are going to make this public commitment, if you are going to accept awards for
which
this
they won
program,
an award last year for this, right?
They won an award. Well, we can talk about how much the vetting was done by the judges when it came to that award, right?
I wonder if that award will be taken back. Huh? It should be rescinded.
I think that's the least of their worries at the moment.
No, but I'm just saying, as a matter of course, right?
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we talk about that in a second, right? But this is, if you're Dow and your other chemical companies, if you're going to be making claims about how good you are in terms of recycling, you better live up to it. And that clearly did not happen here. And Dow and Sport Singapore said that they gave an apology because there was a quote-unquote lapse. Well, I don't know if lapse is the right word.
Well, for them, it is. Yeah.
And when I'm a judge, and I am a judge every year for ESG awards, and what I always say is, I want the numbers. I want to see exactly how much you've done in terms of recycling, what has been the exact environmental impact, how much money has this had an impact in terms of finances. And if you can't show those numbers, you should not be given any award. So we don't know what Dow put in for the award and what Sport Singapore put in for the award and how the judges looked at it. But clearly, there was a breakdown either in the nomination as it was submitted or the judges didn't do what they should have been doing.
I mean, just briefly, because I do find this area fascinating. Yes, at your level, at corporate level, boardroom level, there should be an audit. The numbers should be compiled. But in whether we like it or not, in the real world, particularly in this part of the world, there is a close one eye culture to certain things. For example, when I donate my clothes and shoes to various charitable organizations, it's almost a given anecdotally that the migrant workers might take their pick first. I've heard this for years. And I've never had a problem with that because they're not being paid very much. If they want to take a few T-shirts or whatever, that's up to him. It's that, they'll take a few for themselves and then give the rest to charity. How do you overcome at ground level, at street level, if you like, that close one eye culture? Because it's very easy to say at boardroom level, right, we're going to audit, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But at that level, in the factory, how do you deal with it?
Okay, because it might have been that there was a one eye open, one eye shut.
I'm sure.
There isn't today. NGO, now, it depends who you are and it depends what the project is. Look, NGOs are looking at you. The media is looking at you with both eyes open. You need to know this. You need to be able to have full transparency on what your program is, what your goals are, and did you reach them? And if you didn't, admit it. Right? Say, hey, we tried. We didn't do as much as we should have. Here's where the problem was, and here's the bottleneck in the recycling project. And next year, we're going to try and do better. No one is going to go after you for saying, we set a goal. We didn't quite hit it. We're going to try harder. Here's how we're going to try and do that.
Right.
It's when you don't report on anything, and now you've got reporters putting trackers in shoes and all of, you know, they put trackers in 12 shoes, put them into these Dow bins, and none of the 12 go to where the bins say they're going to go. That's a real problem.
Great reporting, by the way.
Great reporting by Reuters. If anyone's interested to read the story, it's fascinating. We've only touched on the key elements of it, but it was a Reuters story this past week on just Google Reuters Dow recycling, and you'll find it right away.
It's an extraordinary piece of investigative journalism.
Beautiful, beautiful reporting. That should win an award.
Absolutely.
Is that story. Anyway, okay, let's go to the U.S. The U.S. is cracking down on child labor amid a massive uptick. Apparently, the last few years, it's been off the charts how many, especially migrant child laborers, have been found working in factories for major U.S. companies.
Yeah. Look, forced labor occurs in any country where there are a lot of migrant workers and there are employers who can take advantage of them to try and make more money, even though it damages the workers. It happens in Malaysia. It happens in Indonesia.
Yeah.
It happens in Thailand. And it happens in the United States. It doesn't matter where it happens. There are bad people out there who are going to take advantage of disadvantaged people. And now it's happening in the U.S. And part of the reason why there has been such an uptick of violations of child labor law in the U.S. is because there's so many more migrants to the U.S. right now. And there's child migrants. And when the U.S. was separating children from parents and putting them in homes with either distant relatives or no relatives, the children didn't have any money. They didn't have a way to live. So what do? They will go work, and they will work illegally, and people will take advantage of that. And that's why you have seen such an uptick in child labor violations in the U.S. since 2018. There's no mystery as to why this is occurring. Hopefully, the U.S. government is going to get on top of this and put in higher penalties, have greater enforcement. Right now, the violation for violating child labor laws in the U.S. is $15,138 per child. Mm. That's got to go up, and I think it will go up. Otherwise, we're going to continue to have underage workers making bags of Lucky Charms and Cheerios.
And auto parts and everything else.
Everything.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, 70% increase in child labor violations since 2018. What do some of these violations look like? Are we talking children or teenagers? I mean, what are the ages we're talking about here?
Well, typically here in the U.S., these are kids who are working late at night after school. So they're, 14, 15 years old, right?
The reporting was saying some 10, 12 year olds.
It could be that young. I would say predominantly,
for
the work that gets done in the U.S., you need somebody a little bit older. So it's typically, it's people Max's age, right? And they go to work after school, and they're working in these factories that are very dangerous late at night because they need money. And it might be they need money to send home. It might be they need money to pay who the people they're living with. It might be that they need money to eat. Mm. And there should be better social services in the U.S., but they're not. These kids should not be just allowed to live with anybody. But it seems to be the case that they are more and more, and people are taking advantage of it, and they're not looking, you know, for the driver's license. They're not checking Social Security. They're not asking for a birth certificate, and that's going to have to stop.
Yeah, there's this New York Times investigation said most of the kids are minors from Central America. Many are working for a company called Heathside, and they make chewy granola bars, bags of Lucky Charms, Cheetos, you know. So, but I also saw that there were some other ones doing auto parts and, yeah, and all kinds of things.
Suppliers, right? Linked to Hyundai.
Yeah.
Now, it comes back to the previous point. Is this a supply chain issue, or do you agree, like you did with the previous recycled shoes, the onus is on the company to trace back every single link of the supply chain in whatever country?
Well, look, there's two issues. The first issue is, you go after the employer. So you go after who's taking advantage of migrant workers. It could be child labor. It could be basically forced labor, like it that happens in Malaysia and Indonesia quite often, where you take the passport away from the migrant worker so they can't leave. You force the migrant worker to pay agent fees, so they're basically working for nothing, and the company gets the kickback from the agent. So there's all different ways you could have forced labor or child labor. The first thing is the government needs to crack down on the employer themselves. The second thing is, you need to have companies auditing their supply chain, because companies are saying, well, we don't have any forced labor or child labor in our supply chain. Well, you better audit it if you're going to say it. And, yeah, and so you're seeing that more and more happening from companies in the U.S. that are sourcing in Malaysia. Let's hope that companies that are sourcing in the U.S., like if foreign companies like Hyundai, that they're going to check on it. So it's government has a responsibility, but the person who's sourcing has a responsibility too.
And on that vein, good news for Sime Darby Plantation. U.S. customs authorities have lifted a two-year import ban on palm oil products made by Sime Darby Plantation after determining the goods were no longer being produced with forced labor.
Well, and this is an example of if you have that ESG mindset, take care of the problem before it becomes a problem. It is not a shock that there is forced labor where there are migrant workers. Sime Darby Plantation, it had forced labor all over its plantations. The U.S. government then says, we are not going to allow the export of products from Sime Darby Plantation into the U.S. When that happens, Sime Darby says, okay, we got a problem. Now we've got to fix it. So they spend tens of millions of dollars. They put all
20,
of the processes.
20 million.
Yeah, 20 million. Yeah. Well, that's just the number is 20 million.
To compensate the current and former migrant workers.
And then they have to change all of their policies and processes, and they have their lost sales. So it cost them tens of millions of dollars to address this. Now they have done the right thing, and now they have no more forced labor, right? So you let the migrant workers keep their passports. You don't rely on agents where the migrant worker has to do a kickback to the agent who's doing a kickback to the company, which means the migrant worker has to stay for years before they make any money. So they've cleaned all of that up. They've done the right thing. And so we need more companies to do the right thing and to do the right thing before the government comes in and makes it a real problem for
them. Well, let's talk about doing the right thing with America's most famous migrant worker, Rupert Murdoch, who conveniently this week released a new trailer for the new Succession series. I mean, now, truth is stranger than fiction. Tell us about what Murdoch and supposedly did with the Fox network at the previous election.
Okay, not supposedly, Neil.
Okay.
He testified under oath. I'll make this clear. I find Fox it loathsome, so I'll come in with that up front, right? Rupert Murdoch said under oath in a deposition in a case in which Fox is being sued for defamation by a company that makes voting machines in the election. Rupert Murdoch said what he tried to do as Fox was straddle the line between spewing conspiracy theories on one hand, yet calling out the fact that they are actually false in the other. I don't think that there's much of a line you need to straddle.
Not when you're supposed to be a journalistic organization.
Right. And Rupert Murdoch, again, testified. He knew that people like Rudy Giuliani, a key Trump campaign attorney, was peddling election lies. He was given open access to Fox. Rupert Murdoch said, I could have stopped it, but I didn't. And the reason I didn't stop it is not because of blue or red, Democrat or Republican. It's not because of blue or red, but it was a decision about green. This is how Fox makes money.
Right.
Fox keeps its audience by peddling election lies, by promoting Donald Trump and his conspiracy theories. That is why Fox did what it did. They knew that. Now, whether this is defamation is going to be a different question, but they knew that the voting machines of Dominion did not get hacked by Hugo Chavez.
There is a special warm place for these people where they will spend eternity is just unbelievable.
I just can't work out what the shock is here, Steve. I mean, he realized that he could make green, as you call it, by putting nude women on the pages of his British tabloids and by exploiting right-wing dissent. And now in the US, you know, he pursues, or Fox News pursues, a far-right Republican agenda to pacify its audience. What's the big shock here? This is nothing new. This is the Murdoch template for 50 years.
Okay, well, what is new, though, is that what Fox put on the air directly led to an insurrection against the government of the United States of America. It led to the deaths of police and Capitol Police, and it led to the U.S. Constitution almost being, you know, torn up.
Right. So what are the possible
makes
legal,
it different.
What are the legal ramifications then?
Well, the question is, under U.S. law, right, did Fox defame Dominion? Did, because Fox knew that it was putting forth lies, did that mean that they are now liable for the damage that was done to Dominion? Dominion is suing for $1.6 billion. It is a very high standard, much different in the United States than in the UK or in Singapore, to meet the legal definition of defamation. And so this is going to be the case where if you don't meet it here, you'll never meet it in the US. So that's what's going to play out in court. But it's clear that Fox knew it was putting on lies, that it is now being questioned by its own board, who said that, you know, Paul Ryan, former Republican House Speaker, who is on Fox Corp's board of directors, said that Fox News should not be spreading conspiracy theories, yet they knowingly did so. Now, spreading conspiracy theories and defaming Dominion can be two different things from a legal perspective.
Steve, we do have to go. We had one more thing we'll talk about next week: U.S. fees on airlines. We'll get to that next week. Lots going on in the world, though. Thanks for being with us, as always, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys, and see you next week.
See you next week.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.